HBO original programming and HBO documentary films present War Dog, a soldier's best friend. In what looks like the basement of a house, a man approaches shelves filled with hefty pairs of boots. Hanging from hooks nearby, military fatigues, a soldier's helmet, bags bearing the Stars and Stripes flag. Now the man opens a suitcase, lifting out a file marked Dave. From the file, he takes a sheet of paper and reads.
Pepe, I miss you so much. In this ammo can are some things of yours that we will bury at your gravesite. We were unable to recover your body, and I'm so sorry for that. I put these items in the can symbolically for you until we meet again. A jute, a Kong, a leash, a bag of liver treats, and your brush. At some point when we meet again, we can sit together on the green hill and relax like we used to. You did what I could not do. You willingly dove into your only fear, water, to engage a threat to your pack. You did what countless rounds of ammunition, frag and stun grenades could not do, move the bad man out of the hole he was in. Once you pushed him out the second time, he was shot four times. His body was seen floating down the river later that night. We'll never know who he was, but this we do know. He was bad, he intended us harm, and nobody else wanted to go in after him. You did. You're a warrior I hold in the highest regard. You are selfless love. God bless you until we meet again. Thank you.
Grainy images from a night vision camera as a soldier leads a dog into a building. After 9/11, America's elite shadow warriors began to specially select, rigorously train, and secretly deploy with multi-purpose canines. Aerial footage shows a dog quickly covering ground to bring down a suspect. Less than 1% of all military canines are selected for special operations. More night camera footage as a dog takes a scent, then approaches a dark, open window. War Dog, a soldier's best friend. Audio described by Kieran McLaughlin. Laika. Aerial footage as a dog quickly catches a fleeing figure.
Right, so now we're going to chase?
A training facility in Quapaw, Oklahoma. A man dressed in thickly padded clothing is chased through a building by a dog. With its teeth, the dog seizes his arm and pulls him to the floor.
Oh, yeah.
The dog keeps its grip on the man.
Hold on, give me a second.
Good boy,
come on.
Good boy, watch him. Good boy! Oh, good.
Trent McDonald.
Messing with Belgian Malinois and these attack dogs is, to the untrained person, it's a very stressful thing. But if you go into it very clear-headed and you're fair with the animal, it's not... It actually relaxes me. We take that dog everywhere. You load that dog up on a C-17, you strap it down, and you guys are going to Afghanistan together. You don't know if that dog's coming back, and you don't know if you're coming back either. But you guys are going to fight like hell as a team to get back, at least in one piece.
Dogs move round a cage.
Honestly, I decided to be a ranger to kill terrorists. That's why. When they're out there killing your buddies and you're out there killing them, then that's what it is. It's not unicorn rainbow vaginas, you know what I mean? It's the real deal. I like the thrill of the hunt. I like to chase you down. And I noticed that when I looked at the dog kind of had the same mentality that I had. I had met Benno on a professional level overseas. Benno had more time in and more deployments than most E6s and Ranger Regiment. Stop and take a look. That's an invaluable person. That's an invaluable soldier. That's an invaluable asset. That is something that you cannot go to PetSmart and get. So it was April 27, 2012. It was actually my birthday. I think I turned 20, 27 years old.
Sharana, Afghanistan, 2012.
As we were flying into the mission, I got the squirter call, which means we have guys fleeing from the target compound. Instantly, what that does to me is that says, tonight's gonna be a good night. I got over the radio and I started singing Happy Birthday, and the platoon sergeant quickly got on the radio and told me, shut up. We landed, and right when we landed, it was game on. There was two military age males running up the side of this mountaintop. We did a call out on them, hey you, this is us, please come out with your hands up, this is other coalition forces. We've been doing this for 10 years, you know who we are, get the out of your hole. The two guys refused to, so I sent Benno. And he followed that guy's footpath to the T.
Ben chases the fugitive.
Benno bit the guy. He had a nice, good full bite on the back of the tricep. We started to close the distance on the guy. The guy wasn't screaming and hollering like he normally does. That's the first thing that threw a red flag for me. And I noticed that the guy is not screaming and yelling because he's actually wrestling with this dog. And he doesn't care that he has like a bunch of dudes around him. Right before I could put that safety selector switch from safe to fire, that guy had already killed my dog. The guy instantly died. I grabbed Benno. I don't know if he knew he was exactly there or not, or if he was losing just a mass amount of blood and he knew he was dying. He wasn't trying to bite me or anything, but he was alive and he was blinking. My finger was actually in the neck wound of Benno. I looked at the PA and I said, hey man, what can we do? And he just looked at me and he said, there's nothing we can do. He said, I'm sorry, man.
Night vision footage. A helicopter hovers above troops on the move. Then a prisoner is escorted from a chopper.
When we walked off that target, you know, I was still covered in blood, and I picked up the phone. I called my mother, and I called my wife, and I just let them know that, you know, hey, it's my birthday. You know, you guys, you know, I didn't tell them anything. You know, I didn't want to talk to anybody about it. I just wanted it to be my birthday.
A memorial stone reads, MPC Benno, Ranger Dog of War, 1st Battalion, 75th Regiment, killed in action, April 12th.
When Benno was going to get cremated in Kandahar, I came out and they had a full-blown, like, rampside ceremony. The regular army, everybody had gotten together and done it. And they gave me a toe tag and an American flag. I put it on an American flag that I carried for 6 deployments. And on the toe tag, it says Staff Sergeant Benno, and then underneath it, it says Hero. And that's kind of when it hit me that, like, you know what I mean? Like, these, it's not only just me and it's not only these Rangers, but you have, like, regular army people who are like crying because a dog's dead. When I started to think about it and I saw that toe tag, I noticed that they weren't crying at a dog. They were crying at a soldier. They were upset because a soldier died.
A German Shepherd-like dog peers from a cage.
Only when I went back to the kennel, they had a dog named Leica. And that's when my trainer was like, well, Leica's really young, this is her first deployment. I said, yeah, but I want her. You know, I was like, I think I can do something with her.
Trent locks a dog in a pen, then approaches a second dog, which is watching patiently. The dog hobbles after him. It is missing a foreleg, its other foreleg heavily strapped. The dog is captioned, Leica.
She kind of has rule of the roost, you know. She doesn't get put in cages and stuff like that. They know it too. They do what they do because they're pack animals. They're always trying to get above. They're always trying to move up ahead. You know, every dog here knows that Leica is the one. I can bring any one of these dogs out here and Leica will put them all in their place. And she has 3 legs. Puppy doesn't want to play with Leica because Leica's too serious. But she's like the mother hen. She keeps everybody in check. You know what I mean? She keeps everybody in check. Ain't that right, girl? This is the only picture I have of her with 4 legs. Everybody always asks me for pictures of her. This is it. 4 legs. Right there. That's all you get. It's the only one I have of her. And then you got her. Look, I'm sorry. Leica, come on, honey. Let's not do that today.
Leica pulls a jacket to the ground, then holds it tightly between her teeth, even when Trent tries to take it from her.
Oh, man. Come on now. Make this easy on me.
Eventually, she relaxes her grip.
24 hours after I got Leica, I was running targets with her. That was my 8th combat deployment. You know, I'd already lost a dog at that point in time. It doesn't really matter who you're going after, just as long as you get to come home.
Sharana, Afghanistan, 2012.
It was only Leica's 6th mission. This is all a very new environment. Leica's, she's getting pretty amped up on the noise. All I did was I just remained calm. I had been in that situation way more than she has. I needed her to calm down. So what I did was I took a ball out of my pocket and I told her to sit. And when she sit, I paid her. So all I was doing is I was just changing the game for her. When the dust settles, like, the whole front of this structure was pretty much dilapidated in. I looked at the squad leader and I said, oh yeah, I feel good about this. You know, let's go ahead and send her in.
Dog cam footage as Leica enters the dark building followed by troops.
As I'm moving through this dense dust, I can see Leica's IR strobe flashing, and you can only see it through your night vision. I knew it was my dog, and I went to go investigate what she had. That's when I saw the outline of what appeared to be an enemy killed in action. And I said, okay, this guy he's obviously deceased. I got up to Leica, and I remember her tail touching my shins. And I ran my hands up past her vest. I remember my thumbs touching her camera, and that's when I grabbed onto the back of her collar. That's when the guy rose up. It was so loud and it was so hot. I had never been that close to the opposite end of the barrel before. You know, I definitely thought that was it for me. And when I raised back up, all the shots had already went off. And Peregrina came up through the window, and he eliminated the threat in about 2 shots. That is when I started to recall Leica. And I could see her, and she actually had what it appeared, actually it was. It was her right limb was in her mouth. And she was trying to pull it off. That's when we noticed that tricep had been torn apart by a AK-47 round. I was like, great, again, you know, another dog. It was a sock in the nuts, and it hurt.
Night vision footage of soldiers, each of whom wears a camera mounted on his helmet.
And I remember getting to the cache and thinking to myself, like, if she makes it through this, you know, if she makes it through this, I want her.
Photographs. Leica unconscious on an operating table, her right foreleg very badly wounded. Surgeons carry out the operation. Then Leica sleeping after the procedure, her foreleg now amputated.
Fans, please direct your attention to the north end zone as we welcome Leica to Neyland Stadium. Leica is a decorated war dog that saved the lives of American troops in Afghanistan. In honor of her battlefield heroics, Leica was featured on the cover of National Geographic in June 2014, a symbol of the hero dogs fighting alongside U.S. troops. Let's give a big orange round of applause for the service dog and hero, Leica.
At the University of Tennessee Veterinary Medical Center.
Oh my God.
Leica and Trent approach a staff member.
Look how strong she is. Look how strong she is. It's okay, babe. It's okay, Leica. Hang on. You remember this place? Do you remember? Daddy knows how to make you lay down better than I do. There you go. Good girl.
Okay, good girl. I got her face.
Her left forepaw is checked.
That looks so much better.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Easy.
She does not like her feet messed with. She never has. No. And when we first started, we couldn't do this without sedating her almost completely. She's a pretty lucky dog, for sure. Those are some pretty nasty injuries. But I can tell you she's adapted beautifully because when she was here, we'd play soccer with her toys, and we put a ball out there, and she would take that cast and whack it. And she had great aim. I mean, she was a great soccer player. You know, she'd get mad if you wouldn't kick it back to her.
Oh, God, I love it when she does that. It's so freaking cute. After seeing her, I just couldn't stop smiling. because she looks so good and because I'm so attached to her, and that's how you get with her. To be a dog that can attack people and to be so affectionate and loving and just create those kind of feelings in people is amazing. Good girl, come on. Good girl, good girl. Oh yes, she is so much better.
On a submerged treadmill, Laika wades through a tank of water. Now wearing a life jacket, she swims in a small pool. Later, Laika grips a tennis ball in her mouth as her life jacket is removed. Lying on the carpet at home, Laika watches Trent do the washing up.
Laika, did you eat all my food?
Now Trent lies on the floor rubbing Laika's tummy.
It's really cool to forge that bond and build that bond because we're more of a team now than we were when we were even in Afghanistan. Where our bond developed and where our team developed, it was developed when we were out hunting for deer antlers. And that's what she likes to do now. She likes to hunt for deer antlers. She likes pets on her head. She likes to watch Grey's Anatomy from time to time. That's her favorite show, is Grey's Anatomy. They took it off air, which about killed her. But, every once in a while we get some reruns, so it's good. She likes her Grey's.
Trent and Laika are outside.
You know, she wasn't big in combat with me, but she went through a lot of life things with me. After being blown up in 2009, I got addicted to my painkillers. I mean, she helped me through that addiction, man. It was lonely. You know, my ex-wife takes my kid, moves all the way back to Arkansas, 625 miles. At the end of the day, when everything fell apart, the only person that had me grounded was her. She couldn't speak to me. She couldn't say, hey, pull your head out of your ass and get your shit together. No, she could only look at me, you know, and console me when I was, you know, in pain, trying to get the stuff out of my system or, just an emotional pain for my, you know, my ex-wife taking my kid and leaving. I mean, that was tough.
Trent watches Laika move through long grass.
Good.
Laika really helped me keep my sanity through it all. She's not a dog. She's her own person. She's got her own agenda. She's got her own scheduling. She does her own thing. I don't know what it is day by day, what her scheduling is, but I remain flexible because she is very, very needy. At the end of the day, I can sit on my couch and I can look at her and I can put my forehead on hers and, just take a deep breath and let everything go and kind of be at my place of peace. And that's what feels good to me.
He looks on as Laika happily swings a tennis ball on a string. Then she relaxes on the grass with the ball in her mouth. Mika, Vienna, Virginia.
Today, some North Mississippi crime-fighting dogs are being honored in DeSoto County. North Mississippi reporter Michael Clark joins us live with a high five. Michael?
Now, canine units often keep folks safe in DeSoto County, but this past week, patrol units took home first place out of more than 100 teams in an annual competition held in Indiana. The three dogs, Sammy, Mika, and Mag, are shown here in our video. They took home the gold in the 13th annual American Working Dogs Canine Olympics. These canines...
So this is from 2012. On it, it has the name of the handler, Paul Leslie, Deputy Paul Leslie, 2012. So there's a good chance that it's still the same handler from 2012 that she's probably with.
Good afternoon, DeSoto County Sheriff's Department. May I help you?
Yes, I'm trying to get in contact with someone in the canine department.
You need somebody in the canine department?
Yes.
I can get somebody a message for you.
My name is Sergeant First Class John Dixon. It was a military working dog that I had worked with, Mika, a little female Malinois.
Mika?
Yes.
Okay. I think I know who actually may have had something to do with that dog. All right, I will get somebody to give you a call back, okay? And you are the owner?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Now it's still waiting.
A caller bears the name Mika. Then, footage from a training video. A dog moves through a series of rooms, eventually finding a man whom it grabs by the arm, trying to drag to the floor. John Dixon.
In 2006, the command had made a decision that we'll start our own ranger dog program with ranger dog teams. I was fortunate enough to be one of the four that was chosen to go start this program up. I actually left Afghanistan a little bit early. They sent us off to the dog school, and that's where I first met Mika. As soon as I got there, they took the four of us and they paired us up with a dog and they said, this is your dog. So I was a little nervous actually when I first met her. I was like, I don't, you know how to really approach this dog yet. You know, our instructions were just hold the leash and walk around with them. Wherever they want to go, just walk with them. It's amazing just by holding a leash with a dog attached to their end, like how they can pick up on any little cue that you have. You know, even when we weren't supposed to be working or training, we'd be working and training, which for her, it's not work and training. It's, you know, for her, that's, hey, daddy's here. We're having time together. It's fun. And for me, it wasn't really working or training either, to be honest with you. It was fun. It was enjoyable. And I loved doing it.
A photo of Mika.
Her being my first dog, we worked so much together and I spent so much time with her. We built that, you know, that really, really strong bond. Whenever she left, there's only, you know, there's only a handful of things that I could keep, you know. I would love to have kept her with me, you know, forever, but, you know, that's not, it wasn't possible. So I kept what I could. And this collar was one of the things that I could keep that, you know, she had from the time I got her till the time she left. And then the other thing that I kept was a picture of her that we had all of our dogs. We had taken a picture of them and blown it up, and we put them in little frames and we had them hanging on the kennel wall so that, you know, when you came in the kennel, it'd be all the dogs up there in a row. And I want to get it kind of cleaned up during the move. When we were moving, it kind of got a little damaged. But it's the only picture, the only big frame picture that I have, so I still keep it up. These were call signs that she wore on her vest. So she was wearing this one on the mission night where I was wounded, and you know, all that happened and we got separated. That actual brownish red color is actually blood from the mission. I just never cleaned it. I just left it the way it is. I thought about cleaning it or wiping it off, but I just left it the way it is. I just feel like I don't want to change anything from it. So
he enters a cluttered garage where he opens a trunk, pulling out a bulletproof vest.
Then this is the kit that I was wearing on the mission where I was shot with Mika. And it's got the bullet hole where it went through there. So on my 8th deployment, the second deployment with Mika to Afghanistan, the third weekend we walked straight into an ambush. Pretty much the worst imaginable situation you would walk into. There was just a blaze of flashes in front of me. And so all I could do is hit the ground and shoot at the flashes. Mika started going crazy. And the anxiety started to build in her. She's raring to go. I'm keeping her attached to me the whole time on a tether and trying to keep her calm.
Night vision footage. Explosions light up the darkness.
And I start hearing the radio traffic that we're taking mortar fire and rocket fire from the outlying compounds that we had passed. We knew we weren't going to push through this and fight through this. We knew we needed to break contact. We had a AC-130 and a A-10 circling above us, taking turns hitting this target.
Helicopters strafe the ground.
It sounded really powerful. The explosions looked huge.
I thought the enemy would just stop shooting at that point, you know? But they didn't.
A few of them broke off with AK-47s and went down the backside of the hill and kind of looped around and came to our left flank.
I had one hand on my dog, like, you know, telling her to calm down and then, you know, bring my other hand up to shoot. And that's when I just, you know, felt the hit.
I didn't know what it was. It felt like a rock. It felt like a huge, like, sledgehammer hit me.
When I fell to the ground, I lost all control over her, and she was just barking and making crazy noise and rearing and jumping up and down. And, you know, I was trying to get my dog with one hand and get my weapon back up, and I could only use one arm. My other arm just wouldn't work. And before I could even think too much, one of our ranger buddies who was running with me just grabbed my carrying handle on my body armor and started dragging me backwards, and the dog's trying to run the other direction towards the people that are shooting at us. She's trying to run that away and barking and pulling against me, and that's when one of my ranger buddies popped the tether loose, and he took her and walked her over to the side. Like, just a few seconds after that, and then a round hits. It's kind of when I lost sight of her and, you know, started going in and out of consciousness. And that's when they slid their hand under my body armor in the back and said that's like all four fingers, like they just went into like a big hole. And then they pulled it back some, and that's when they noticed, like, you know, just the massive amount of blood that was coming out. So then they, you know, started working on that. I was tied down to a stretcher and I was being carried. But I do remember intermittently throughout the exfil, I'd ask about my family, then I'd ask about Mika, then I'd ask about my family and Mika. My main concern with my family apparently was making sure that they talked to my wife and she wasn't mad that I got hurt. And then, so I'd always told everybody, no one, you know, in my family really knew exactly what I did and stuff. You know, all the BS stuff that we tell people to comfort them and make them feel all right. You know, I'm not really that important. I don't really engage with a lot of stuff or whatever. Of course, that's hard to hide once you get injured.
A photo shows a large bullet hole in John's left shoulder.
Now, you know, I wake up and I'm like, all right, you know, where did all my ranger buddies go and where's Mika at? You know, they talk to me, they're like, hey, we've already notified your family. And by the way, we flew Mika here. Do you want to see her? And I'm like, yes, I want to see her, of course. And as soon as she came in there and she seen me, she tried to jump on my bed. And the doctors, they didn't like that very much. They're like, oh, but we're like, whatever. She didn't jump all the way on the bed, but, you know, she halfway up on the bed. It made me feel so much better. And they had also taken her out. And they had explained to me, like, hey, she's going to stay here while I was medevaced back to the U.S. Because they felt that, you know, she could still serve the mission there if they paired her up with somebody else. The kennel master and handler came and picked her up to take her to work, and she wouldn't. She quit. She would just run back behind everybody, cower behind their legs, whatever the case. Even when there was no danger, you know, she was suffering from PTSD from that and from the separation, I think. If the last thing that you saw was stuff blowing up, and then all of a sudden you don't see your partner anymore, you know, there's all kinds of things that go through your mind. At that point, it becomes a liability to the dog and the handlers. As they realized, you know, I was going to be able to recover and get back to handling dogs and get back to doing the ranger mission, they decided that it'd be best to retire her out to a police department. They felt that she was still a pretty young dog and she could be useful in the civilian police sector. For the first time, it was explained to me, you know, everybody gets their first dog back. You're going to get this dog back. That was the ease that I had. That was the only comfort that I had, knowing that one day, you know, I would get that call. I mean, obviously, she didn't know that she was leaving to go somewhere else. There was no way to explain that to her. Like, hey, Mika, I'm not going to see you again for a long time. if not ever.
A photo of Mika with her police handler. Then, in DeSoto, Mississippi, a boy prepares to throw a ball for Mika.
Right here, sit.
One.
Now throw it.
One.
Throw it.
One.
Throw it.
Five. Go! Remember the... Your turn, Pops.
No. All right, hey. Let's chill with the ball throwing. She's moving kind of slow.
Mika, sure.
Got the ball.
Paul Leslie.
I really don't have a whole lot of details that I know about her past other than she came from the Army Rangers and she was involved in some combat situations that ultimately caused her to, you know, shut down as far as working. I knew that she had had a handler that had gotten shot and that she had had some problems as far as turning the light back on and getting back into work. I had her about 3 weeks before we started dog class. We'd come home and play ball, and I'd give her a bath and brush her, and just slowly starting to build that friendship, that bond where she would trust me enough to, when I called her, she'd come, you know, 14, 15, 16 hours a day. I mean, a lot of people don't spend that even with their wives. You know, they wouldn't even want to spend it with their wives that long.
Mika, hey, Bata.
Good girl.
Good girl.
Good job. You know, it's not like we're baking cookies here. You know, we're going after bad guys. We're trying to get, you know, drugs and explosives off the street. She is just one of those dogs. She's one in a thousand, you know. You very rarely find a dog that has the temperament that she does, the sociability that she has, you know, the ability to come in here and lick on the kids' faces and then turn around and go outside. And if we had to bite somebody, hey, we're all in. I love her like one of the kids. It's that strong.
In Vienna, Virginia, John Dixon takes a phone call.
Hello?
This is Paul Leslie. How are you doing?
Oh, Paul Leslie. I'm Sergeant First Class Dixon. I was Mika's handler when she was with the Ranger Battalion.
Oh, and, how are you doing, man?
Good. I'm doing good. I was trying to track her down and find out what her status is and how she's doing. And
she's doing good. Obviously, she's on up there. Yeah, she moves around kind of slow, but she's still doing pretty good.
So she is retired?
Yes.
Okay. So how long has she been retired for?
We just retired her last month as far as paperwork goes.
Just last month?
Yeah.
Because I was told that I'd have the option to pick her up when she does retire.
I understand. We give the handlers the option when we adopt them out, obviously, to keep them. And I'm taking that option, and that's the option I'm going to stay with.
The way I've always seen it is, that was kind of like a promise with the sheriff department, and then, you know, one day, you know, like when and especially now, you know, like now I'm not deploying and stuff, and you know, we'd be able to be reunited, and so I'm just really struggling with a lot of that right now.
I'd be more than happy to get you some pictures of her or anything like that, if you would be willing to take the pictures.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. I was just, you know, like I said, I'm going, you know, I'm just thinking about this really hard right now. And I got pictures of her. I'm not trying to turn down your pictures. I'm just saying I just feel like I need more than just pictures.
I understand. Well, Mr. Dixon, why don't you give me a call back tomorrow? I'm going to take care of my little ones here in just a minute. Shoot me a call tomorrow.
Okay, well, I'll call you tomorrow.
All right, Mr. Dixon.
Okay. All right.
All right, bye.
Bye. You know, even if I could pick her up to go camping here and there or whatever, you know, like, I just want that relationship back with her, and I want to be able to help care for her. I mean, that would mean a lot for me if I could just, even if Paul doesn't need the help, I mean, if he would just let me help care for her,
that would mean a lot for me because I feel that I owe her that. And, you know, I'd love to do that for her.
Next, John is in the kitchen with his wife and children. A young girl takes something out of the oven.
Thank you. So John has this way of things about him where he doesn't like to show if something hurts, or he doesn't like to show if something's bothering him. So he just kind of compartmentalizes and he deals with it on his own. So the picture that people see on the outside is happy John, funny John, level-headed John, but in his sleep or in those moments where it just spills over, you see it in the hurt or the guilt when he talks about her or when he goes back and looks at those pictures. There's one picture we have of the day that she left. It was the last day we spent with her, and you can just see it on his face, and you see it on her face where her ears are just laid down sideways and he's holding her like a baby. And that's where the hurt comes out. And it spills over. Most of the time he just pushes it down because he doesn't want everybody else to see. Because for him, it's like weakness. And Mr. Big Ranger, tough guy, they don't show weakness. They don't want you to know that something hurts.
John answers the front door.
Dang.
Hey, man? Buddy, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, man.
Hey. I haven't seen you in 100 years.
Yeah, I know, right?
Later, you want a beer?
Yeah, I'll yeah, sure.
Drink a beer.
Yeah. Where's the nukesters at?
Randy's in the backyard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Loving it. He's fully an old, charmed, retired old man. But he'll still bite you. He'll still bite you. Come check him out. He's like super dog.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Boom.
The sneak attack.
Yeah.
Yeah, see?
Look at that.
He probably remembers you. Come out.
Hey, buddy.
Hey.
And you didn't become a snack. That's good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Trying to get Mika back. And then we'll see how that goes.
At Dixon, he was just a pioneer in his own right. I'd say he's got the demeanor that works with handling. You can't be a guy that shoots off and gets frustrated. He's just real kind, patient, quiet kind of guy that worked well.
Sit. Good boy. Good boy. Off. Good boy. Yes. Rout. 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 Good boy. Yeah, that's a good boy.
Still good.
Still good.
He's like, everything's coming back to me.
I am a war dog.
Yes.
John's with his friend Donovan and his dog, Nuke.
We have the lame sleeve.
The I don't want bruises on my arm sleeve.
Yeah. And we have the fun sleeve.
And I'm for sure gonna have bruises on my arm sleeve.
So, whichever one, pick your poison. Very nice, and I know he knows the smell,
like,
so.
Right there, like, where's,
yeah,
so where's that guy at?
Yeah, he is right here.
What is he doing?
Oh.
You ready? Yeah.
In a game, Nuke runs for John, who's wearing thick padding on his arm. The dog seizes the padding in his teeth.
Good boy. Good boy.
Eventually, Nuke pulls the padding from John's arm.
There we go. There we go. Good boy. Good boy.
He did not want to release that.
Yeah, that was good. He's still got a strong bite.
Still got a chomp. Good.
Once he got his mouth full on it.
Good boy, good boy.
That was pretty good.
Ow.
He's like, I want more.
There's more. I still see the sleeve.
Good boy.
Good boy.
I think Dixon is still kind of where I was, just waiting, waiting on the word. He's in the waiting stage. Getting Nuke back, he's that final thing that's bridging and making what I used to do an actual reality, and he lives in my backyard, and I get to see him every single day and remember all that, everything we did.
Donovan Hunter nods, then a photo of him in combat gear alongside Nuke.
When I look at him and know that he did every single thing that I did for the last 3 years of my career, and he rangered up just like everyone else did, and his transition, he care less. Like he's a dog. He's not struggling with it. It's like if he's not struggling, like I don't have to struggle with it.
It's awesome coming here to see Nuke with Donovan, and it really kind of drives it home that like this is the way it should be. It should be like this for every, you know, dog team that serves the country. It should be us out there, you know, on the grill, tossing little pieces to Mika and Nuke, you know. But Mika's missing out of that equation, and I believe that she should be here with us.
John scratches Nuke between the ears, then goes inside. A full moon hangs in a dark blue sky. In DeSoto, Mississippi, Mika is one of three dogs eagerly waiting to be fed in the kitchen.
Are they all in? Yeah. Oh, okay. Hold on. Oh, hold on. Part of yours fell out. Okay. No, Rollo. Get where you're supposed to.
Paul Leslie.
At first, it was shocking. You know, we've had her this long, and I didn't know anything about John.
And then to tell us that, you know, I was promised her, I want her. That's the first we'd ever heard of.
Yeah,
it.
Well, that's a promise we never made.
Yeah.
I have never talked to John Dixon up until recently on the phone. I don't look at it as we were stuck being babysitters. No, I don't look at it like that. We absolutely got the better end of the bargain.
Come on. Valerie. Valerie.
Valerie. Valerie. Valerie.
Quit fighting. And we don't even look at her as she's a dog. We don't consider her a dog. I mean, she's a human to us. And then to say you want her, I was promised her, that was, I cried. I was upsetting. I'm like, is this true? Are we going to lose her? Well, I'm not going to lose her because she's a part of the family. It'd be like you know, one of my kids were gone.
A close-up of Mika. Then, in a clearing, John lifts a section of tree trunk at one end. He raises it up so it balances vertically, then falls in the opposite direction. Next, he lifts the trunk onto one shoulder and carries it off.
Most nights, you can tell that he's dreaming about something, whether it's trigger squeezes in his sleep, and if he's got his arm on mine, then I feel his finger squeezing triggers. But a lot of nights, it's still calling out her name when it's that scenario of getting the night that he got hit all over again. So he'll, Mika, Mika, or just one big shout of Mika.
There's a lot of things that, you know, that I never want to forget, but at the same time, I don't want to think about them ever either. And some of them thoughts, you know, they just are hard to go away. And it's not that you want to completely, like, pretend that it never happened. I mean, you kind of do, but it's impossible. But what you can do is take your mind off of it by doing things, you know. You know, I spent a lot of time on deployments, a lot of time doing things that, you know, that aren't normal. And this is very normal, very simple, very normal.
He chops the wood with an axe.
And it's not that I'm trying to, like, run from my feelings or anything. Like I said, it's like, it's just got to get away from them sometimes. Like the pressing thing, like even with Mika, you know? I can't stand giving up on things. Oh yeah, this one's a monster.
He sets himself to split another section of trunk into firewood-sized blocks.
One of my biggest fears, and one of his biggest fears, is that she's older and the thought of her passing before he gets to see her and have that guilt lifted off of him and have that release of knowing that she's okay and that she's happy and that she's healthy and that that pain will stay with him forever is like hell. Because if he can't find a way to let that go, then it'll always be there. And like that hole forever. Because it doesn't matter how many new dogs come in and out, she's there. And if he can't know that she's okay, then he's not okay.
John's wife wipes away a tear. After multiple attempts to see Mika, Paul Leslie cut off all communication with John.
To finally pinpoint, like, I found her, this is her, this is where she's at, and then get shut down and turned away again, it's just, all that comfort is just gone. I mean, you know, I was still holding on to this little bit of hope, but every time it gets a little harder and a little harder, you know, I'm just trying not to let it completely crush me, but, you know, that's why I got to keep going at it, and, you know, it's going to happen, so.
He nods. Next, it's bedtime for John's children.
I pray the Lord my soul to keep. Let angels watch me through the night and keep me safe till morning light. Amen.
Amen.
Mika died in October 2017 without John being able to see her. Pepper, Southern Pines, North Carolina. Dave Nielsen stands under blossoming trees in his garden, then speaks.
There's the war after the war that you don't know is coming. You may hear about it. I heard about it from my Vietnam friends. But you don't know it's coming until you're in it. For a lot of years, I was angry at myself and at a lot of things and confused. Because it may be just a dog, but she was my best friend. So after Pepper died, you get to where you realize you have to move on with life, and you do, and it's a process to figure it out. At this point, 10 years later, I want to talk about this.
He's in his basement.
Basically, I got home after my last rotation. I put it all in a box and haven't looked at it since.
He shows a photo of Pepper.
This was her sort of first photo as she first got to the unit. This is just a map of where she died. I think I'd fed her out of this napkin, or brought some steak down from the chow hall for her the night before she was killed, and then it was still in her kennel, so I just wrote her name on it and tacked this up somewhere. This is a letter I wrote to Pepper that I forgot about till just now. It's, Peppy, I miss you so much. In this ammo can are some things of yours that we will bury at your gravesite. We were unable to recover your body, and I'm so sorry for that. I put these items in the can symbolically for you until we meet again. A jute, a Kong, a leash. So while I can't say what the unit is, I can say that I tried out for it and I made it. And it was the absolute greatest day of my life when I made it. My daughter hadn't been born yet, but Getting selected after selection was amazing. I asked if I could be a canine handler. Went over to the kennels, I was shown around, I was shown all the dogs. All of them were males except for one dog named Pepper, this Belgian Mal who just sat there in her kennel and looked up at me, and you know, I could look down and see her, and she looked at me, and just a cute little dog. And I asked, why is this dog here? Is she somebody's pet? No, she's a working dog. She'll dirty up just fine, don't worry. We've seen her bite. And I still didn't believe it. She was small. She was 50 pounds, if that. She also had a hyper-intelligent look in her eyes that she would tilt her head, but look at you, and I could tell she was thinking and feeling. I don't know why I fell in love with her instantly, but I did. We're trained in a dog handler's course to not turn them into a human being, but it's so hard not to. I mean, the dog hugged. She hugged me. She came up, put her arm around me, and put her head against my neck. I don't know how dogs do that, but she did. She was hilarious. I mean, I could tap my shoulder right here and she would jump up, spring up in the air and land in my arms, and then just sit there and look at everybody. It was almost like she was trying to get laughter. She was a lap dog who became a beast of fury on target.
A camera mounted on Pepper's back shows her moving quickly along a dark, narrow passageway and down steps, where she seizes someone by the arm and shakes.
I wanted to establish a bond between us because I knew we were getting ready to go to war. It was coming within months. I didn't really know what I was doing either. To start out, nobody does with a new job. You learn each other's movements and voices and just you learn each other's subtle cues. And I learned hers and she learned mine. If I turned left, she would move back and left. I mean, the more we worked together, the more we got in sync. I taught her to bark. There's a command in Dutch to bark, which most people don't do. Why would you want your dog to bark if you're going to a target and you're trying to be quiet? I taught her to bark because I wanted to give her the counter command to be quiet. Stil, which is zip it, be quiet. Saturday afternoon, she came up next to me and just flopped her head on my chest. And I laid back and she fell asleep. And I just let it happen. And she would lick my face or nuzzle my ear. And that's really what I was going for, was that bond that couldn't be broken. It was really like having a sister or just a great friend at my side all the time in war. It was a very special bond that happened with us. When we would lose a man, when somebody would get killed and it's real quiet in the house and nobody wants to talk and they can't sleep anymore and people are sad, and Pepper comes out and sits in their lap and makes it a little easier. I would just hear people laughing down the hallways. She was making her rounds. She would go and see people. She would visit the guys. About once an hour, she would just come up and I could feel her nose on my hand. She would just come and nudge me a little bit. I'd pet her a little bit. She'd lay back down. She served way more of a purpose than helping to find bad guys or sniffing out a bomb.
Several hundred meters from a statue of a soldier stands one of a dog. Slowly, Dave approaches the statue and contemplates the inscription, which reads, "Constant vigilance. The bond between a SOF handler and his canine is eternal, trusting each other in a nameless language. Here we honour our SOF canines that have paid the ultimate price."
Eternal. That's a strong word.
Stone tiles have been placed in the ground surrounding the statue. Each one bears the name of a dog. Dave kneels and places his fingers on a tile marked with the name Pepper.
The more I think back on it now, the more I really think there was an element that can't be explained. Just a link between man and dog that Special doesn't do it justice. I mean, it's a profound thing going on there between handler and dog that's nearly impossible to explain.
Military footage shot at Muhammad Sali in Iraq, 4th of February, 2006.
It was a rough night because my friend had just died the night before and we had been woken up early to plan for this huge thing, so we didn't have much sleep, both of us. We landed and Pepper and I got out. It was on the bank of the Tigris River and it sloped down steeply. It was a muddy slide down into thick brush where the person was hiding. There was houses right there and kids live in those houses. It was too close to level it.
Aerial footage of explosions.
We tried for hours and hours. I was getting close. I wanted more than anything to be able to shoot the guy and not have to send Pepper. So she's in drive, it's pitch black at night, you can't see anything. She's running up to the other teammates, her pack, she knows it's them. She's almost going to them for permission to go after this guy. She's going up to each guy. I sent Pepper once. She went after this guy, disappeared into the brush.
Aerial night vision footage shows Pepper vanishing into undergrowth, then after some time, reappearing.
10 minutes, 15 minutes later, she came back to me up the hill, sort of sluggish and all wet. And she didn't like to swim, she didn't like water, so I knew she had been in the water. I'm checking her like I'd been trained medically to search the dog for any issues. She sort of comes back to life. She gets the pet back in her step and she's okay. I tried to love her up a little bit, but she didn't want that. She wanted to go work. She knew where the guy was. I knew that she knew because she was pulling on me and she wanted to go there. She wants to bite like nothing else. After hours of trying, I decided to send her again. And she sort of sprung through this high grass a little bit and turned back and looked at me, which she didn't do. She just had this look that I hadn't seen in her. She was thinking. She was looking at me and thinking something. And she was feeling something as well. And I'm looking at her through my night vision. And it was just, I love you and I'm doing this for you and see you later. She went over into that brush, into the spider hole where this guy was hiding. After she pushed the guy out of the hole and he moved to the right down south on the riverbank, the team went after him. Now it's time to find Pepper, and she wasn't coming back to me. I asked everybody on the ground to start looking for her. There was a lot of people there that night. Everybody's searching. After 5 minutes, they said, we found her. And so I was relieved. And then they said, oh, sorry, it's just her marking device, her light that had come off of her somehow and it had to be in a struggle because it was secured to her working vest. So we knew that she had been in a struggle. These teammates and these brothers of mine and these uncles to her, already cold and wet, but they got colder and wetter by searching in just nasty, wet, swampy holes that nobody would want to go into. It was her family. Her family was looking for her. Her brothers were going to do everything they could do to find her, recover, and help her just like she had done for us. There was just a sadness that came over everybody. I could feel it. And at one point I loaded up with another guy on a helicopter and we were just flying sideways looking for her on the bank of the river. We did everything we could to find her. Nobody gave up. We had to be told, and more than once, to abandon the search. The call came that if the sun's up, it's light. We're gonna get people killed if we stay here. And it started to set in that I'm not gonna get her.
Helicopters soared above the soldiers on the ground.
The helicopters picked us up. We flew 5 minutes back to our house. Then when I hit the ground there, the sun was up, and by that time, and I knew that was it, and I had her kennel, her empty kennel, and I just took it out and threw it and walked back to the house. No, but I started to have that dream that night and many nights after where I'm looking down and she's running back and forth where she's supposed to be picked up, where the helos came and picked us up. She's looking for me and I can't get there. I wonder if we love each other as much as they love us. This is the strobe light. It's when they said we found your strobe, when we found the dog, this is what had come off. You know, it blinks. I thought they found her.
He squats by the statue, which wears a strobe light on its back.
And then the look back is what really, why I really question everything. I still think about it. I'm still very much bothered and tormented by my decisions. And I don't think without the rapport that we had, without the relationship we had, I don't think she would have done it.
At home, Dave watches footage of the operation on his laptop.
Oh, there she goes.
The footage shows Pepper running off. Dave struggles with his emotions as he continues to watch.
And it was just clear to me that my daughter has a daddy because of Pepper. It made sense.
Yeah.
What does yellow mean?
Slow down,
that's right. You're almost there. Stop at that tree. Climb the ladder, too. A dog party. Look at the dogs party with Kate.
I would have put myself in harm's way or sacrificed anything that I would for a human being for Pepper. You don't fight because we hate the bad guys. We fight because we love who and what we love. And she was the same way. I have my personal spiritual beliefs. I think I'll see her again. So I know one day we're going to meet up. And I just want to thank her. And my daughter does too.
On a wide expanse of water, a red light flashes on a buoy gently rocking on the swell. Behind it, the sky is crimson as dusk draws in. A reflective-looking Dave sits on the deck of a boat as it passes the buoy. Photos sit on a sea chart. One of them is of Dave's daughter. Then the boat is on open sea. On a shelf in the cabin, the spine of a book or a DVD reads War Story. The boat moves towards the setting sun as it hangs just above the horizon. The end.